Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, on this half-hour culinary journey of culinary history. And this past weekend was an absolutely gorgeous fall weekend here in the Northeast. And I was up at my home upstate a little ways from New York City and in my garden planting garlic for next spring. I try. I get it, but, you know, it's not as good as I see in the markets all the time, but I am determined. So I get out there and I plant my garlic cloves because there's nothing better than to just pull that fresh garlic and use that to cook with. And I got to thinking about my guests today, and I got to thinking about garlic. And, you know, every chef uses garlic. Dishes aren't the same without garlic. It's become our wonderful allium that we love. Aside from leeks and onions, you can't cook a dish without garlic. It makes everything taste so good. And it's funny because it wasn't always accepted in America. In fact, a lot of the immigrants who came over in the early 19th century, late 18th century and early 19th century were shunned because of the stench of garlic, and they were considered peasants and garlic eaters. And how quickly things change, and how we have embraced the cooking of the Europeans and particularly the Italians. And today I have a very special guest with me. My guests are all special, but I consider her very special for her foresight into what would be popular in America. My guest is Emilia Taragni, and she's the editorial director for Fiden Press. And Fiden has just put out a brand new edition of The Silver Spoon. Now, if any of you remember a few years ago, the big splash this cookbook made, red, white, and green cover, The Silver Spoon, and in Italian it was called Il Cucchiaio d'Argento. It is the Bible, it's been called, of Italian cooking, and indeed it is the size of a giant unabridged Bible. It's a big book, 1,500 pages, of wonderful recipes, wonderful photographs, and the book was first published in 1950. Emilia, welcome. I want to hear more about this. Tell me, the book has quite a history, right?
Yes, the book has a fantastic history because it was a book that was published in 1950 in Italy. It was a little bit smaller than what it is now, but it was already a collection of recipes from all the regions of Italy. So the publisher of this book, who actually was a magazine publisher, decided that there was something missing, and that people really need to have traditional, authentic recipes from all over the country.
All the regions. It contained mostly the regions of the North, or the cooking of the North, in the first publication?
In the first publication was mainly focused on the North and the center of Italy, including Tuscany, Umbria, and a little bit of Lazio. and mainly because the effort to collect all the recipes was a little bit too overwhelming. And so already in the second edition, that was just a few years later, they started to include recipes also from all the other regions of Italy, including Sicily, Sardinia, and Puglia.
Interesting. And now in this English language version contains all of those, all of the authentic regional recipes as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually, in these 50 years, of course, the book evolved, and it has been continuously updated by the Italians. And the interesting thing is that, in a way, they succeeded in keeping the authenticity and the traditional recipes, but also to adapt to a kind of modern cuisine.
Okay, so now we fast forward to 2005, and it was your idea to bring this book to the American public, to get a translation finally after all these years?
Well, as all the wonderful project, it was a little bit by chance, because I was visiting this publisher in Italy, who is mainly a design publisher, mm-hmm. and at the time I was doing design books. So I went to see this Italian publisher just to see if there was any design book that we could do together. And they just, I was with my publisher, who's English, and I am Italian. And they just said, well, you know, we don't really do design books. Actually, to be fair, the only book that we ever done, it's a cookbook. And they said, you know, Il Cucchiaio d'Argento. And I knew the book because it's always been in my family. It was my book. It was my mother's book, my grandmother's book. So I just said, oh, it's a fantastic book. This is a really fantastic book. And my publisher said, okay, we should do it. And I said, well, we don't really do cookbooks. And they say, yeah, but if it's a good book, we should do it. And that's how it started.
Well, I mean, I can't believe, number one, I can't believe that it took so long to be translated into the English language. And number two, what a daunting task.
That's yeah.
not a small job to translate all those recipes into the English language, but then they have to be tested and the quantities have to be altered for the American market or the English market. You did an English version and an
yes.
American, a British version and an American version?
Yes, we did. And actually, when we started, we were quite naive. And I think that this is the reason why we started, because we had no idea what we were doing.
Didn't seem as hard as you thought it was, as it ended up being, right?
No, we just thought it was a certain number of words that we had to translate. And that was it. And then we realized that actually the way in which English and American people write recipes is completely different from
Italian
did.
Explain that. What was that major difference that you noticed?
Well, the main difference is in the way you display the ingredients, because in Italian you display them in order of importance. Mm-hmm. And so if you have chicken with lemon, you put first the chicken and then the lemon in the list of ingredients. While in the American way of doing cookbooks, you put the ingredients in order of appearance. Mm-hmm. So if you have to start with the oil, you start with the oil, and then you list the oil, and then the lemon, and then the chicken.
But I have to tell you that that format of recipes has only been codified as of late. If you look at early cookbooks, it was the same as Italian. They were the ingredients were just all jumbled up, and it was primarily in the order of importance as well. And I don't know who got together and decided how the recipe should be written, but now it is more or less, I guess we can say, a codified version of
yes.
recipe writing that, you know, it is the way the ingredients as they are used.
I always thought that the main reason is because in Italy you just want to know which are the main ingredients, because you always substitute the ones
that
are not really the main ones.
As does any good cook. I mean, you
exactly.
use it as an outline, right?
Yeah.
You fill in the blanks.
Yeah, and the other main task was to write the recipes and to explain them better, because in the original book some of the recipes are really not explained. And this is mainly because you assume that everyone in Italy has a knowledge of cooking, of basic cooking, that is much, much deep than an American or an English
person. Yeah, you know,
person.
I understood that this was the reasoning behind that, it, you know, they were basic ingredients. But, you know, of course, how quickly times change. prior to a lot of these books, you know, recipes were really handed down, as in most cultures, mother to daughter. They weren't really any list of written ingredients because of the regionality too, correct?
I mean, there were so many. Yes, exactly. You know. And also the basic explanation that you do before really tackling the recipes are never in the recipes. So it's the people who worked on the recipes, they were laughing in the way the Italian wrote them. And I remember there was a recipe with a fish in which it was like, take the fish and put it in the pan. And I said, oh, you don't wash it, you don't clean it, you don't. So all these things that for us Italians sound absolutely normal and that you don't have really to read them down. For an American audience, we thought it was much better to be more specific and to explain the recipes better.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, some of the earliest books in Apicius or Apicius, that's exactly how the recipe. It's very frustrating for a culinary historian, for a food historian, to go back and try to cobble together, you know, what a recipe would actually taste like, because there are no ingredients, there's no order of cooking, there's no method of cooking, actually. It's just kind of, they appear as, well, you would take this and do that. And I'm actually glad that the book is written the way it is now. People, I mean, and a comment was made in the beginning by you or whomever, you are the editor, but some of the other people putting it together, that the way it is written now, it will train any person to be an Italian cook.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I think that the success of this book is because the recipes are really easy to follow. They are very well explained. And also, Italian cuisine is quite simple, so you don't have a lot of ingredients. So the great things about Italian dishes is that with like 3 or 4 ingredients, well put together and well cooked, you can have a fantastic dish mm-hmm. in like 10 minutes.
Yeah. When I was leafing through the book, I have to laugh to say leaf through it. This is, people will understand once they see it. It is a really big book. You sort of hold it and you carefully turn some pages over because it's not like a magazine you can leaf through. But it was interesting to see that there are some sauces, some dishes, some techniques which appear that I said, well, wait a minute. Is this, you know, these are the French names and the French versions, but those were the classic, I would guess, the classic versions of those sauces or dishes, which were codified in France and not in Italy. Is that why they appear?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there is always a kind of overlapping between cultures that are so close one to the other.
Right.
So we've always been very close to the French, very much enemies in terms of cooking.
Yes, indeed.
But there are some of the basic sauce or technique that we absolutely share. And, of course, they will never be exactly the same, but they resemble quite a lot. But mm-hmm. then always, of course, there is a kind of Italian touch.
Well, and of course, I have to say I lived and learned to cook, actually, in Italy. And I had to, you know, open the book, and my husband was the one to say first. He said, okay, quick, see how authentic it is. Look up spaghetti alla carbonara. And I looked at it. There are certain recipes that you look at and you know immediately by looking at the ingredients that whether it's authentic or not. And every recipe I turned to was, in my opinion, you know, absolutely authentic. The way that I learned it from, you know, a mama in Rome. Of course, it was Roman cooking I learned.
Yes.
And not, you know, not Northern cooking.
And actually, this is quite interesting because this is mainly also the way in which the book is used in Italy. Mm-hmm. Because very, very often you have this endless discussion about food while you are eating, that I found it quite interesting. So you are eating and you are talking about food, and then you discuss the recipes, and there is always someone say, oh, you have to put cream in the carbonara, and mm-hmm. I say, oh, God, no,
what?
No way. And there is always this discussion, okay, look up in the silver spoon and see if it's really like this or not. So it's really used as a kind of definitive Bible.
That's right.
To see if the recipes that you are doing are the traditional one.
It is. I mean, it's encyclopedic in the inclusion of the numbers of dishes and techniques and sauces. And it's really, I think, an excellent reference book that anyone interested in Italian cooking would have or should have on their shelves. My question is, where was it all my life? Well, first of all, I know that it wasn't translated into English. But when I was living in Italy a lifetime ago, I was not aware of this book. Now, that is in part due to my ignorance and not having the facileness with reading Italian. I learned to read Italian through recipes, through cooking. But I always knew about the Talismano della Felicità, Ada Boni, and that was my go-to book. And I wasn't aware of this book and wasn't out shopping around for recipes. And then when it finally came out, I went, ah, so this is what I was missing all those years. And it's interesting that what happened, I read in the press notes, of course, is your first printing in 2005 of the English language version sold over 1 million copies.
Yes.
I mean, it was a runaway success.
Yes,
right?
It was absolutely a great success, especially exactly because it's the authentic book. And I think that in Italy, almost everyone has it, but it's a book that is it's not a celebrity book. It's a mm-hmm. book that doesn't really have an author. So it's a book that you buy for your daughter at the time when someone get married.
No, the must-have wedding gift.
Yes. And now it's even, I see mothers given to their children when they go to university, for example, mm-hmm. because it's a book, but it's not a book that really you talk about. It's a kind of given. You have it in the kitchen.
It's, and, well, for us, like the joy of cooking.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a book that... We don't really advertise it with foreigner people because it's something that is very domestic. It's mm-hmm. very intimate in mm-hmm. a way, and I think this was the reason why it was no one thought to translate it because they thought that it was something that was so Italian that it couldn't do him well in outside.
Unlike today's celebrity driven, chef driven cookbooks, well, tell me about the task of doing this book. I mean, you had to use, I would imagine, a whole cadre of cooks and recipe testers.
Yeah, and also we had also to test them in UK and in the US because
with American stoves and American pots
and
pans,
and also because the translations of the ingredients
the
in terms of cups and spoons and especially for the baking that is the most difficult one, we had to test them and to see if they work and to adapt it. And actually, in this new edition, we did a little bit more work on it because during this year we received a complaint and some critics and about recipes, oh, this doesn't work. So whenever we have received, we have taken it very, very seriously. Sometimes we just go back and say, I'm sorry, but you can't cook. So that's the main reason.
You don't need a recipe. Yeah. We told you what it was about.
But actually, sometimes there were little mistakes, and we took them very, very seriously, and we retested them, and we corrected.
Now, is that the reason for this new edition? Or?
Well, the main reason for
the
new
edition...
We're
only talking a few years.
Yes, right. It's just a few years. We did... there was one thing that was completely missing that probably due to our naivete, we didn't really realize it. There were no cooking time and preparation time.
Oh, my goodness.
They were embedded in the recipes in a way, but they were not separated with the ingredients. And that was something that was really missing because you see recipes and before you even start to read it you want to know how long it will take,
right?
And it's very interesting because then you will see that most of the recipes, they're really quick, and so it's a real plus for the book.
Yeah, once again, I mean, cooking time is always, you always glance down, you could see at what temperature for how long, you know, but the preparation time, this is something very, very new to the American cooks as well. And I think it was something that started with some of the magazines. Whether it was, I don't know whether it was a Bon Appetit magazine or not, but that's that they gauged the preparation time. It's a very new thing to come along with recipe.
And I think it's very useful because there are for some dinner you want to spend or you have the time to do more complicated things, and other times you really want to do a nice dinner and you don't have the time, so you just want before you start even thinking about what to do, you just want to know that in the time you have. have, you can do whatever you want.
Well, it's interesting. In the beginning of the show, I was talking about how Americans didn't accept, well, they didn't accept foreign cooking at all, Americans. We're such a young country, but it was pretty much English and Dutch foods. And little by little, the cultures were accepted, and they found the dishes tasted really good, like spaghetti joints became very popular in Bohemia in downtown New York. But it's what's interesting is that the foods that transcended the borders most, and of course first, and interestingly enough, interesting to understand, easily to understand, were things like pizza and red sauce spaghettis, and because those were the immigrants coming from, you know, the Naples region and the Sicily region, bringing their foods with them. And I thought that it was interesting that the cookbook, the original version of the Cucchiaio d'Argento, had mostly only the north regions represented in it. And the food that really won the hearts of the American public from the immigrants were the southern foods.
And actually the same things happened in Italy, because after the war there was a big immigration from the south to the north.
Mm-hmm, that's
and
true.
They definitely brought a completely different culinary culture. For example, I am from the north, but in the north olive oil is quite a recent addition. Because early on they were using only butter.
Butter and cheese area.
And right? Even region. Pasta, especially dry pasta, mm-hmm. is something that comes from Naples. Mm-hmm. And in the north you used to have a little bit of fresh pasta and a lot of rice, because that was what was produced. And with all this new immigration, there was a complete new diet that came from the south to the north, and that's been completely adapted and adopted, and now you, of course, spaghetti pomodoro you find everywhere in the country, and the same with pizza.
Yeah, well, and you say too in this book that a lot of the very well-known dishes, such as pizza and spaghetti dishes, you know, are represented in this book, but you kept even the dishes that were considered more home-type dishes or very local dishes, like papa alla pomodoro,
yes.
Or Tuscan bread soup.
Or ribolita.
Or ribolita, right.
Yeah, and also we really wanted this book to be as traditional as possible. Mm-hmm. One of the big questions that we had when we published it was what you do with variety meats. That is not really something that Americans like or that they are used to cook. Mm-hmm. Or even veal, for example, is not very popular. But this is really what Italians eat. And in this book you have over 2,000 recipes, so if you don't like it, don't do it. But it's interesting just to read it and to understand the culture through the food.
Right. I think we are growing as a country, Americans. We are maturing in our tastes, and yes, we're using more organ meats and lots of veal. To me, veal is like this. Yeah, it's the other white meat anyway. So,
yeah.
But it's interesting because I say this book escaped my radar while I was living there, and yet a book that was driven by somebody who was a particular personality. Now, Ada Boni was, you know, the godmother of Italian cooking for many people, and her book was well known to me, as well as Luigi Carnacina.
Mm-hmm.
He was, you know, another great Italian cook and authority on Italian cooking. And there again, they were books driven by personalities, as opposed to this book, which is more like an encyclopedia, you know,
yes,
like a dictionary, an encyclopedia, you know, a Bible, of, you know, reference book.
And
Italian
also
cooking.
The way in which they collect the family, they really went throughout the country to collect recipes in home small trattoria, people who loves food. So it's something that was done with the aim, really, to have all the recipes that people cook at home.
Uh-huh. Interesting. And that it's, you can just pretty much open up and think of any recipe, any dish you've ever eaten in an Italian restaurant or on a trip to Italy, and just open the book. You will find it.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
There. Yeah, they're all there. One thing I wanted to ask you about as well was the tradition of cookbooks something that was mentioned early on. This book was not written or published until 1950. I mean, there were other versions of it, I think, right?
Yes.
But it wasn't published until 1950. Prior to that, a lot of the cookbooks were really geared and aimed towards the affluent.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the change that Italy went through the first half of the 20th century was quite amazing. I mean, it was really, really a poor country at the beginning of the century, mm-hmm. and very, very slowly it went through different wealth. And it was only after the Second World War that there was people who could really eat properly, while before it was only the high class that could really had a proper meal and a very, very good food.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and
especially
again,
in the cities.
And once again, the dichotomy between the north and the south.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Even if with the food that was, the south always have a very good tradition of good food, and because the produce were there, and the cuisine is quite a humble cuisine,
mm-hmm.
so you didn't really need to spend a lot of money.
No, they had the fresh ingredients.
Exactly. Yeah. But yes, the cookbooks were only for a certain class, and I think that this was the reason also why this book was particularly successful, because it was in the moment in which people began to be a little bit better, and so they had the money also to buy cookbooks and to learn or to practice what they've learned from their mother or from their grandmother. So this idea of having the recipes spread out a little bit more, and the book could reach many, many people.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think about some of the books even earlier on, like the end of the 1800s. There's
like the Artusi.
Yeah, I was going to say Pellegrino Artusi, La Scienza della Cucina.
Absolutely.
Science of cooking and the art of good eating.
And also in the way the Artusi is written, it's quite obscure, and it was absolutely aimed to people who have a very, very high education.
Mm-hmm.
So it was,
you had to be able to read, number one.
Yeah, first, but even if they could read, it was written in a way that was extremely difficult.
It was more philosophical.
It was very philosophical. And while the success of this book was really to have a very simple way of writing the recipes.
Yeah, and that's that. So this is, I mean, this is just approachable from so many angles. The new Silver Spoon. I mean,
yes.
It's a very approachable book. It looks big. It looks intimidating, but it is very approachable. I think something that I would.
Yeah, and the other thing that we did with this new edition is to add more photography, because,
yes.
Of course, you can't have a photo for each of the recipes, because 2,000 is not possible. But we also understand that having an image of a recipe really makes a difference.
And there are, I mean, you say you can't have a picture for every single recipe, but there are a lot of pictures, and I mean,
yeah.
Beautiful photographs in there that really, and everything looks very homemade. It looks homey. It doesn't look too modernistic, too, you know, and almost some of the pictures look almost dated, if you will. But that is the whole homespun on the dish.
Yeah, we were very careful to do, I mean, there are 400 photographs.
That's a lot.
And to choose recipes that there is quite a good variety. So the photographs, you can see how this specific recipe looks, but it's also a guide for all the other recipes that do not have a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And we did in a home kitchen, and with really the idea to have something that you can replicate almost the same way.
Mm-hmm. Now, does Fiden Publishers, do they own the rights to the Italian language version too, or only
no.
the English language?
No.
Just the English language?
No, no, no. We have done it in, I think, 12 languages.
Well, I mean, all the other languages,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, we own the rights of all the languages but Italian.
Except Italian, right. What I wanted to, what I'm asking you, in your opinion, and of course you're a little too young to remember a lot of what went on, but, you know, for the American, from your research of the American public, I mean, I know what I relied on here in America as far as going to different books to get some authentic recipes or to check up on something. What do you think Americans, what book, what author did Americans rely on before this was published in English.
You mean Italian book?
Yeah? Italian cooking, yeah. I mean, we had Marcella Hezzan.
Yeah, I think Marcella Hezzan
was late.
Probably,
that was quite late.
And
Giuliano Bugiali. That's very late.
I don't think there was anything really so comprehensive and so authentic.
Nothing as comprehensive.
No, but
definitely
also
not.
To have more than comprehensive, that had quite a good variety of dishes and that were authentic enough.
Yeah, because when I started researching for this interview, I was thinking, what did American cooks rely on? I mean, really, a lot of Italian dishes came very late to the repertoire. I mean, we had French dishes, and then we had Julia Child, who published in 1960. But it was, you know, really until Marcella Hezzan came along, and you know, a book that was really, to me, that I relied on a lot because I needed to capture some of the Roman dishes that I did not learn when I was doing my training in Italy. And that was Franco Romagnoli, the Romagnoli's Table. And that was published in 1972 or 3, I think. That was very late.
Yeah, in the UK, there were some small books by Elizabeth David.
Yes, well, of course, Elizabeth David's books,
and,
right.
Well, it was more Mediterranean cooking, right. But there were a couple that were about Italian, that were the first, probably, books about authentic Italian cuisine in the UK.
And then there were the Time Life series, of course,
yes,
early
of course.
On, and then the beautiful books, the big table, it was called The Beautiful Book, but it was like a coffee table book, and that's what I always thought of as Fiden Press, Fiden Publishers. They were always made beautiful coffee table books. So this is definitely a shelf book, and it's a great one. And for anyone who's wondering, where's a good go-to book when I want to know how to make just a regular dish of spaghetti, this is the book. And it's called The Silver Spoon. And it's a wonderful resource and guide, and I'm very pleased that the editor, Emilia Taragni, I'm so pleased that you were able to be with me today to give us the background and secrets of The Silver Spoon.
Thank you very much.
Again, this has been A Taste of the Past, and I've been your host, Linda Palaccio.
Hey, it's Francis Lam, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.